The Grand Luxembourg Follies rolled into Doubtful in style. This was obviously a high-class outfit. Outside of town, they'd taken time to polish up. The lacquered coaches had been wiped down. Them actresses, all dressed in gauzy white and wearing big straw hats, were all bunched on a big wagon covered with red bunting. Man, were they a sight! I never saw such a bunch of pretty girls. Even the harness on the draft horses was loaded with nickel plate, so everything shone bright and fancy. Four wine-red coaches and six wagons came in that June afternoon. Ralston had gotten his promotion men busy pasting up red and black and yellow broadsheets on every fence and barn in the area, so the show was getting the attention it wanted. Those sheets were everywhere. Most of them said, "Girls, girls, girls, the Grand Luxembourg Follies. 36 beautiful ladies, ballet straight from Paris, France. The Royal Flemish Opera singing arias from Milan, Tableau Vivant from the Louvre Museum, the Galleries of Florence, the Prado of Spain, and the unforgettable Folks Arts Ball." Well, that didn't start an itch in every male in Puma County, nothing would. So there was the outfit rolling down Main Street, and people rushing to see what was what. There sure weren't 36 ladies on that wagon, but 10 or 15 would do just fine. Hey, trust me, you feel like you died and gone to heaven.
Oh, no. You seen one, you seen them all.
I don't know why I ever deputized him if he thought like that. Oh, speaking of that, along came Iceberg, wearing the Puma County Star on his black frock coat, a skinny lawman that looked like he'd just escaped from the bottom of hell. And he had him a new deputy with him, short, wide, and built like a butcher's block, with the muscles of a blacksmith pushing through his shirt. Them two just plain ticked me off. The new company rolled right past the opera house, where Ralston stood watching, and headed for the far side of town. Then it rolled back and pulled up in front of the theater. The girls stepped down from their wagon, waved at all them merchants and cowboys gawking, and at a few frowning ladies who didn't like all the competition getting off the wagon. Sure enough, there was Delphinium Sanders, a cylinder of lavender velvet, scowling at the actresses like they'd done something wrong just by being in Doubtful. One gal, cutest thing I'd ever seen, with a mess of curly red hair and ruby lips, gave me a big smile, and I big smiled back at her and thought about proposing matrimony, but decided I'd wait a little bit. I wanted to see her perform. Pretty soon, the opera house swallowed the new company, and its roustabouts were unloading sets and gear and hauling it in there. They didn't have much time if they were going to run the first show this very night.
I guess I'll buy a ticket.
Yeah, we don't get in free anymore.
I'd like to marry about six of them all at once.
I couldn't handle more than one.
Poor devil.
The last person out of the coaches was a little feller with a pot belly, almost a dwarf, skinny except for the bowling ball belly. He wore a black silk stovepipe hat that added a couple of feet to his person, and the rest of them was all encased in a black broadcloth suit, along with them shiny patent leather shoes that never saw a scuff. He stared around, eyeing Iceberg and his new deputy, and the crowd, and the dour-looking women in it, and the views up and down Main Street. He smiled, lighting up one side of his misshapen off-center face. His black-eyed gaze finally settled on the lavender and formidable Madam Sanders, so he approached, removed his big old silk hat, and bowed clear from the waist with an elaborate sweep of his hand.
Ah, madame, it is a pleasure to be in Doubtful at last. We've heard good things about this place and appreciate your warm welcome. I am Alphonse Desjardins, the author and proprietor of the Follies, late of Paris, Monte Carlo, Madrid, and Barcelona.
You purvey wickedness. You bring shame to Doubtful.
Culture, madame. You will see examples of the great arts of Europe. Opera, ballet, comedy, symphonic music. I invite you. I will give you and your beloved a pair of free tickets so that you may enjoy my little extravaganza. It will delight the eye, balm the spirit, lift the heart, bedazzle the mind.
He reached into his black suit coat and pulled out two purple tickets.
Here, free passes to the greatest show on Earth.
Poor old Delphinium. The lure was too much for her. Instead of declining, she snatched the pasteboards from his tiny hand, even while her trout lips were pursed in disdain. The little feller was delighted, and soon had handed out another 10 or 12 purple ducats to assorted gawkers. That seemed to me a pretty good way to make a few friends. Two of them tickets went to Iceberg and his new deputy, who could have walked in free anyway. But there was the sheriff, eyeing them purple tickets like he'd never seen the like. After that, the impresario vanished inside the opera house, and there wasn't much to see. The town's women kept their eyes on the door, half expecting someone naked to rush out of it, but all they saw was the stagehands and teamsters hauling stuff inside. Fancy sets full of glitter and big trunks, stuff like that. And some of the other roustabouts had a wagon over at the hotel and were hauling trunks in there. Looked like the actresses would all be squeezed in there and would find their travel trunks in their rooms after the show.
I guess we buy our own tickets.
The crowd was thinning now, the excitement over. And pretty soon the streets of Doubtful were half empty again, except for all them fancy carriages and wagons. I want to find out who that new deputy is. Rusty and me, we hiked over to the Last Chance Saloon and found Sammy Upward in his usual white apron, polishing his shiny bar. Sammy plucked two tumblers up and started to load them up, but I slowed him some.
Sammy, we don't have badges anymore.
I know that.
He poured our favorite hooch in there, bourbon for me and red-eye rot gut for Rusty. I never could figure out why Rusty liked to scorch his tongue out of his skull.
Okay, what happened?
Supervisors didn't like how I was keeping the peace and got rid of me, and the new man fired my deputies.
Iceberg. Yeah, we've been hearing stuff. Is it true that Iceberg's gonna shut down the saloons and close the cat houses and boot the tin horns out? Well, that's what I'm hearing. Also, no one does business on Sundays. Is that true?
Why, if it is, some of our best citizens will lynch him, and I may join the crowd.
I don't know. I have no idea what's happening. It all seemed to crank up when Ralston built his opera house. Now there's a regular army of mean old ladies out picketing, and I get robbed, my horse is stolen and killed, and my room rifled and my stuff stolen. And the politicians call it a crime wave and blame me, and then fire me. And put into office a feller who's not resigned down in Medicine Bow County, far as I know.
Somebody wants you out.
Maybe it's not me. Maybe it's a way to shut down the opera house.
I don't get it.
I don't get it either, but I will.
That man that was killed outside of here, who's he?
Pinky Pearl, Ralston told us. He was an advance man for this show.
Well, like making arrangements?
We buried him, and Ralston said a few words.
That was aimed at this show.
Or at Ralston and his opera house.
These shows siphon a lot of cash out of town?
Ralston says no. They actually bring cash in. Cowboys come in and spend.
Yeah, they spend in here and Rosie's place. I did a good trade.
And over at the Mercantile, they didn't sell one union suit or one bandana.
Well, now you're getting somewhere. I got one question. What's Medicine Bow County like with Iceberg Law?
They voted themselves dry, so Iceberg shut down the saloons, threw out the madams, and shut down all businesses on Sundays. It sure is silent there. I visited there a couple of years ago, and it was like staying in the back room of a funeral parlor. The ranch people, they headed for Laramie if they wanted a good time. No one ever heard of Prohibition in Laramie. And what's her name, Carrie Nation? She never showed up in Laramie, busting bottles with her axe. You know what it is? That there temperance union. It's all women. Next thing you know, they'll be wanting to vote. Makes me pine for the old days. 5 years ago, when a man was a man, and a woman knew how to be a woman.
Yeah, there's our future. And that's what the Pima County supervisors are heading toward. Next thing you know, we'll have a woman in office here. Maybe that's why you were axed.
My ma, she always said that women already are the supervisors. She says women tell men how to vote, and they do it if they want peace in their house or a little kiss at bedtime. After Rusty and me finished our drinks and got out of there, we found ourselves in that little cubbyhole of an office Ralston had. Across from us was the show's boss, Alphonse Desjardins, still wearing his stovepipe hat over his straight black hair.
So,
we buried your man. We don't know who done it. I got the saloon men listening. They hear things.
That verse seems a little inhospitable. Pinky Purr was a gem. By the time we would roll into a town, he'd have the theater ready, the broadsides pasted on every barn and fence, the tickets printed, the rooms ready. Oh, he was the best in the business. I cannot replace him.
I feel real bad, sir. We got some trouble here. There's some folks, they don't want to show in Doubtful. They got rid of me and my deputy Rusty here, and they put in a man who don't have no vices at all. He don't even drink coffee. He's got his county so locked down, it's like Sunday mornings all the time.
He is the sheriff here now?
He's wearing the star, and them supervisors, they told me I was done for.
What'll happen tonight?
They'll look for some reason to shut you down.
I offer many reasons and take great pride in it. We are avant-garde.
Avant what?
Progressive.
That ain't how that's spelled, but I'll take your word for it.
Will they wait for the show to end?
Beats me, Jardine.
It's Monsieur. Call me Monsieur.
Well, you're a friend no matter what you get called.
We offer splendid tableau vivant.
What are them, draft horses?
No, mon ami. They are living art. We create in living flesh and blood the art of the Louvre, the Prado, and all the great art museums of Europe. You will see Rubens, Rembrandt, Goya, and a host of other splendid paintings brought to life with live models.
I reckon I don't get the half of it. But Mama always used to say, wait and see.
You think these live paintings will get you into trouble?
Monsieur, a man who will not sip wine, who will not puff a pipe, a man who makes the whole world a sepulchre. Ah, my friend, the Follies puts a halt to all funerals, and this angel of death will not favor it.
Oh, you don't say.
You will be my guests, and I have a small request. Keep order. Protect my company.
I don't wear the badge anymore, Mansour.
Pretend that you do.
I sure want to see one of them tables, even if my ma wouldn't like them. Ralston ushered us out. The place was a dim madhouse, with sets being assembled and costumes getting unpacked and the footlights getting charged with fresh kerosene. I saw that redhead and smiled, and she smiled back. You in one of them tables?
Tables? Oh, tableaus. Why, yes. I play Lady Godiva in one, and I'm in three others.
I'll be looking.
Anytime, any place.
Well, the biddies showed up with their signs when the box office opened, and a lot of Doubtful people came flooding in. There was Delphinium, still in purple or lavender or whatever, waving a black and white poster that said, Keep Doubtful Pure. And the rest of them ladies with posters talking about sin and death and evil and stuff like that. The crowd, they mostly just grinned and enjoyed the ladies and ignored them as they lined up to shell out their 75 cents for a good seat or 50 cents for one of the rear ones or 2 bits for standing room. They were off the ranches, most of them, and some had even scrubbed up a little. I watched Iceberg and his new deputy wander close, and I all them lusty cowboys buying seats. He stood there, sort of starchy and skinny, looking like he didn't approve of nothing. The other one, the deputy, he was a block of beef on legs, and looked like he wanted to punch anyone that got an inch too close to him. They both were armed. The pair of them wandered inside, and I waited to see if they'd come out, but they didn't. I sort of thought they were in there for some purpose. Maybe they were looking for some excuse to shut down the show. I followed him in and watched him sit in a couple of seats down front, but on the side aisle, and just stretched themselves waiting for the action. The place was filling, and those show people were lighting the footlights. The piano player came in, and at about 7:05, according to my timepiece, he lit up a tune. The Follies would crank up now. That dwarf with the silk topper, he came out waving a black walking stick and addressed the crowd. All them cowboys and locals were sitting real still.
Ah, my friends, we are pleased to be in Doubtful, Wyoming. It is the most beautiful city we have ever been in. It is filled with good people. It is surrounded by a natural world unsurpassed. It moves our hearts to be here and to present our little entertainment to you. And now, our national anthem.
What's that?
The country song.
How come no one ever played it before? Wow.
come they're all standing up?
It's what everyone does.
That sure was an awful song. But then about halfway through, there was a regular parade up there. All them young pretties in gauzy white dresses, marching in a row, carrying little flags, smiling with painted lips. And then they all lined up either side of Jardine and stood there with their hands over their hearts. They sure were pretty. I spotted the redhead down at one end, and she had ruby lips and orange hair, and she choked me up. And I wished the anthem would never end so I could just watch her stand there. But finally it ended, and Jardine peered out from beyond the lights.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, it is my honor to present the Ballet de Monte Carlo, direct from the Riviera.
And next I knew, just as all the cowboys and shopkeepers were getting seated again, the pianist starts in, and pretty soon a bunch of actors came leaping and stomping out on stage. Well, I'd never seen the like. There were a couple of men dressed in white underwear, and they must have stuffed rags in their crotch. Either that or they were very peculiarly made. And then the ladies came out, and they were showing a lot of leg beneath itty-bitty pink skirts that looked like frosted donuts, and the rest of the pink outfits sort of fit real tight from waist to neck. And then they were leaping and whirling, and them two males in the underwear were tossing the gals around while the piano sawed away. I looked around for the redhead, but she wasn't in this number, so it wasn't as interesting to me. But pretty soon all the leaping and twirling stopped, and they all stood in a line and bowed, even though no one was clapping. The cowboys, they didn't know what to make of it either. With all those half-naked people up there, you'd think they'd put a bed in the middle of the stage. Then people run off into the wings, and the music flared up again, and the little gent with the black silk hat paraded out again.
Magnifique! And now, friends, the finest tenor in the Republic, direct from Brooklyn, New York, Sanfred Stolp!
Some guy in a tuxedo came out, flapping his tails around, and nodded at the cowboys a few times.
In mine island cottage.
And then began singing Roaming in the Gloaming. I'd heard that one once. The crime is usually laid on the Scots.
What's a gloaming?
Beats me.
As he sang, all the gals in the company, each with a big fan made of ostrich feathers, came swooping out. It sure was pretty, all them fans swaying and whirling around together while that feller sang away up there like someone was paying attention to him. Then when that feller was on the final chorus, the gals, they pretty much were pushing the fans over their heads and wiggling them up there. And it sure was nice to see the gals at last, but it took them so darn long to get there. I sure like this show, and all them gals in their little blue dresses. The Grand Luxembourg Follies were the best thing that ever came to Doubtful.
And my Scotch bluebell.
The little guy in the big black top hat came back out.
And now, my friends, we'll take 20 minutes for a brief intermission. I thank you.
Well, they piled out there into the June twilight, and about 20 minutes later, some lady with a cowbell came around ringing, and that was how they corralled all the citizens of Doubtful for the second act. Before we headed back in there, I scouted around a little to see where Iceberg was, and I found him fast enough, standing in deep shadow, along with that blocky deputy, in a rear corner, trying to look invisible. That was a bad sign. When we all got lassoed down, the piano whipped up a tune or two, and they started in on a chorus that had them gals dressed in pants. All the pretty gals in the show was wearing boiled white shirts and black tuxedos and top hats. Then that singer, who nearly drove us out the door, came back on stage and began talking at us.
Long ago in England, there was an evil nobleman whose taxes were so heavy, they were ruining his town, a place called Coventry, and driving the citizens into despair. The man's wife, named Lady Godiva, took pity on the suffering people whose rents were much too high and begged her husband to lower the rents, but he refused time after time. Finally, weary of her constant begging, he told her he would lower the rents if she would ride through Coventry wearing nothing at all. Lady Godiva agreed to do it. And so the town of Coventry prepared for the ride, shutting all windows and doors and hanging curtains. But there was one fella, a tailor named Tom, who drilled a little peephole in his door and watched as the beautiful woman rode by on her beautiful horse. But because God is good, the tailor was struck blind right then and there. And now, ladies and gentlemen, Lady Godiva's ride!
Sure enough, a feller dressed like a knight was leading a nag on stage, and there she was, my red-headed friend, buck naked, her lithe body glowing in the footlights. She was plumb pretty, sitting bare on a bare horse, walking slowly across the stage. I'd never seen the like, and I was sort of hoping she'd take the reins and steer that horse into the aisle and out the front door so I could have a closer look. But all they did was stop in the middle of the stage, and she looked around some, and we could see more of her when she did that. Then a little door in the back of the stage creaked open, and some runt of a man peered out and stared at her. And then there was a flash of light, and the little peeper, he clasped his arm to his eyes and staggered back, and then the redhead, she and her horse slowly walked across the stage and vanished. That sure was the best scene I ever did see. I didn't know what my ma would think of that one, but I sure liked it, and I'd pay to see it the next night, too. The little fella with the big hat came scrambling out and kept lifting that hat and lowering it.
Now, esteemed ladies and gentlemen, we will celebrate the virtue and goodness of this new nation, this republic built on freedom. We will honor Lady Liberty, the goddess of freedom, the divine spark that has turned this republic into the bountiful and golden land of dreams. Now, my dear friends, let us applaud the goddess of liberty!
Them curtains rolled back, and there she was, up on a big box, standing there with a golden crown on her head, a scepter in her hand, I think that's what them things are called, and not much else. There was some sort of gauzy, filmy stuff draped over her, but not much more. She sure was pretty, and there wasn't no part of her we couldn't see through that gauze. There she was. Every inch of her celebrating liberty and freedom and all that stuff. There wasn't nothing hid. From her bright red hair down to her pink toes, she was freedom itself. That sure was a dandy moment. And we never loved our republic so much as we did then. She stood real still, like a painting, and hardly moved an arm or turned her face. And we sure had a fine old time studying on liberty. I was all for liberty and freedom. And now I could think of nothing else. Well, all good things shut down, and pretty soon the curtain shut her off from us. The Follies sure was a nice show, and that goddess of liberty was the standout.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome again Sanford Storp as he sings a song by America's favorite composer, Mr. Stephen Foster.
Way down upon the Swanee River.
I glanced around, and there was Iceberg staring at the stage like he was ready to cause trouble, but he just stood there in the shadows. I knew something was up, but I didn't really know what. I feared this Foster fella might be a Southerner. I don't like Southerners, and I wish they'd all moved to Argentina. But the song was pretty nice. I'm not sure where that Swanee River is, but it ain't around Wyoming, and I wouldn't want to drink the water.
Far from the old folks at home.
Them gals hustled off, and the little feller came back out.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, last but not least, the grand finale!
The piano thundered up, and the gents were in tuxedos, and the gals in long gowns, and they were doing a waltz. But up on that box behind them was three women, bare-ass naked, the goddesses of abundance, joy, and beauty, according to them signs. They just stood there wearing halos on their heads and not a stitch. And I was all for abundance, joy, and beauty for the rest of my life, especially joy, because she was the redhead that caught my eye. You can't quarrel with joy.
I like abundance.
Then don't work as a peace officer. He gave me an elbow. But all too soon, the curtain cut off the view and the show was over. We sort of waited around for an encore, but that was it. And all the cowboys and such drifted out. The few women in the audience sort of stared straight ahead, not looking at any of the men around them, and pretended they hadn't seen nothing unusual. I was so taken by the whole show, and Joy in particular, that I wasn't paying much attention until Rusty elbowed me again. Then I saw Iceberg and his beefy deputy make their way forward as if to talk to the management, and I got up fast, and me and Rusty pushed forward and followed Iceberg into the backstage area, just in time to see Iceberg throw manacles onto Jardine while the deputy cuffed Ralston.
You're under arrest.
For what?
Violating public decency.
What statute is that? I don't know of any. Show it to me.
For an answer, Iceberg cuffed the manager, who tumbled to the ground. Some of those gals were watching, and there sure was some commotion back there as people scattered. Them fellers who were dousing the footlights quit and got away. Ralston was slow to get to his feet, but the beefy deputy yanked him up. There was blood on Ralston's lip.
I guess that'll teach you not to resist arrest.
Well, that sure was unfriendly. Iceberg spotted Rusty and me.
What are you doing here? Get out.
Guests of management.
Out!
I'm a guest here. Think I'll stay. I was half expecting Iceberg to draw his cannon and aim it. But maybe he didn't like the odds, and instead ignored me and Rusty and turned to his prisoners.
Now, come along.
All them show people gathered now to watch as Iceberg hauled Ralston and Jardine out the door and toward the sheriff's office and jail. At least, that's where I thought they were headed. I followed along and watched Sheriff Iceberg haul them into the county courthouse rather than the jail and straight into the courtroom, which was all lit and ready. And there was Judge Rampart, waiting behind the bench. And there was Lawyer Stokes. And there was the banker, Hubert Sanders. So this here little party had been planned in advance. They hauled Ralston and Jardine straight before the judge.
The charge is public indecency. Guilty or not?
This sure is a fancy welcoming party, Your Holiness.
Contempt of court, $10.
Your Majesties, I scarcely know what to plead because no such law exists.
Contempt of court, $10 for you, too.
Yes, indeed. If we plead guilty to a law that does not exist, what does it gain us?
$500 or 6 months, your choice.
But if we plead not guilty to a law that does not exist, what does that gain us?
The exact same, except that Lawyer Stokes and Sheriff Ike Berg will spend 30 seconds testifying that there was nudity on that stage.
Well then, we won't plead guilty, and we won't plead not guilty.
That's nolo contendere. The fine is your box office receipts.
Right here.
The beefy deputy stepped up, and in his hand was Ralston's black metal cash box.
Ah, capital.
The deputy dumped the loot onto Rampart's bench, and the judge and Hubert Sanders swiftly counted up the evening's take by the light of 3 kerosene lamps brought to the bench.
That's it?
That's it.
Your fine for public indecency is $517.50. Sheriff, unloose those cuffs and let these gents go. Hubert, you take this fine over to your bank and lock it up tight, and don't let any vermin get at it. The wages of sin belong to Puma County.
That was mighty fast justice. Rampart turned to me.
You! Why are you here?
My ma always told me not to stick around where I'm not invited.
Oh, how long, O Lord, must the good citizens of Doubtful suffer the presence of this buffoon?
What's a buffoon, Your Grace? I never did hear that before.
Out!
Rampart was waving his finger at me and Rusty, and Ike Berg was making mean gestures, so we headed into the warm night and waited. Sure enough, a moment later, Jardine and Ralston came ripping out the door, fined and freed. For two gents who'd just taken an awful whipping, they didn't seem too upset.
Nice of them to store the box office for us.
We'll try it again.
That's plumb crazy. You'll go broke.
No, it'll keep Ike Berg from stealing the boodle.
Alphonse de Jardine steered us all into the opera house, and Ralston scratched a lucifer and lit the lamp in his cramped office backstage.
We'll do a little planning. That is, if you two wish to join us. If not, we'll bid you a pleasant evening.
I'm in.
Likewise, but we ain't got much to offer. No badges, no weapons inside city limits.
You'll do. These contretemps happen.
Contra what?
Difficulties.
Are you fellas gonna pack up and get out of here in the morning?
No, the show will go on, and we are adding matinees Wednesday and Saturday.
And you'll get your box office took away each time?
We'll see.
My ma, she always said I'm slow, but now I'm feeling slower.
Your mother, my dear Pickens, was a genius.
Quit picking on her.
Is there trouble in this world?
I imagine.
Ah, you have arrived at wisdom. There is always trouble. The Grand Luxembourg Follies were born to trouble. We have played in countless towns and never been without trouble. There is no place in this republic that has allowed the Follies to play, keep its earnings, and depart in peace. We are the most sinned against roadshow in North America. The ways that the towns on the circuit show their displeasure are endless, devious, cruel, harsh, and cunning. How do you think a show like this survives, Pickens? We survive and prosper. How can that be? Every town has its watch and ward society. Every town has its politicians on the take. But here we are. Have you given it any thought, this miracle of survival?
How am I supposed to think, surrounded by naked women? You put me in an opera house with naked women, and I cease to think. I don't even have a pipsqueak of a thought between my ears.
That is how we all are in the presence of the divine. You have eyes for ambrosia, and that fries your brain.
Who's ambrosia?
She of the auburn hair.
My brain got fried before she showed up, Jardine.
The ways of the local enforcers are endless. That black box containing the evening's cash is a magnet to politicians and peace officers. It is so simple, really. They want a percent, usually 50. Give them half of each night's collections and they won't harass us. Or sometimes, they'll only make a show of harassing us for public consumption. Hand out the greenbacks and we can stage our shows. Quite ordinary, my friend.
But they took your whole ward.
But they didn't close us down.
I guess I ain't following this.
My friends, let us reconstruct how it is here. On the one hand, you have the moralists, the watch and ward people, led by the banker and his wife, Hubert and Delphinium Sanders. They really are a small minority in a frontier town like Doubtful, and powerless. Indeed, there's not even a city ordinance governing anything that happens in this opera house.
No law that I ever did read. But I guess Lawyer Stokes could invent one or find one under a rock somewheres.
Ah, yes. Now then, you have other factions in Doubtful. The politicians, the county supervisors, the mayor, Judge Rampart. Now for them, the Grand Luxembourg Follies is a fine chance to fill county coffers as well as to line their own pockets, wouldn't you say?
Oh, they're not all that bad, I'd say. They only do that when they know they won't get caught. I guess that puts them above most politicians.
There, Pickens. Your mother's son absorbed some of her wisdom after all.
You're insulting her again, are you?
No, I'm insulting you, not Madame. You need a daily dose of insult. Now then, my friend, another faction is the merchants who see the opera house as rivals. For them, any money a touring company earns is that much money taken out of their pockets. It doesn't work that way, but they think it does. If the cowboys aren't buying tickets to shows at the opera house, they could buy long johns and boots from the merchants.
Makes sense to me.
I wouldn't suppose otherwise. Now then, there's another faction in town that profits with every show. The bartenders, the madams, the gamblers, Turk's Livery Barn, the sporting crowd. They support the opera house. They supported you as sheriff because you kept the lid on the sporting district, but didn't shut it down. Doubtful was safe, and they made money, eh?
You got it all figured out. You must be talking to Ralston there.
Even long before the show arrived. I was talking to their advance man, Pinky Pearl. Then we've got Ike Berg showing up, sheriff down in Medicine Bow. And we've got the supervisors deciding to get rid of you and your deputies, like Rusty here. And they succeeded. The one thing we know about Berg is that he's a Puritan.
Ah, Ralston, you insult the Puritans. Puritans aren't against sin. They're against not profiting from it. The New Englanders made fortunes in the rum trade and the slavery trade, too. No. Iceberg isn't a Puritan. He's worse. He's a messenger of death. He's murdered Medicine City, and now he's out to murder Doubtful. And after he's murdered Doubtful, he'll get bored and find some other city to guard. When Doubtful's so quiet that a dog crossing Main Street is the only life inside, then Berg will arrest the dog, execute it for trespass, and move on.
He doesn't want money. He doesn't want fame. He doesn't want women. He doesn't want wine and song and cigars. He doesn't want anything but to murder the town where he's the law. He's arrested boys for playing marbles. He's arrested old ladies who light up a pipe. And there are a few. He's arrested women for hanging their undies on a clothesline. He's arrested county clerks. He's arrested justices of the peace. After he's strangled a town to death, he gets bored. And he finds another town.
Holy cats! You fellas sure got notions about Ike Berg.
It's there, it's in the record. Before Medicine City, Berg was sheriff at Red Rock. And he murdered that town, too. And before that, he murdered Rock Springs. And before that, he strangled Dogwood. That's all he wants. That's all he'll do when he gets to the next town.
Who's that deputy of his?
He's known as the Butcher. He usually shows up a few days after Iceberg and gets hired on.
How come you know so much?
He is a person of interest. He was sheriff in three towns we've played in.
You know the feller?
We are well acquainted, let me say.
Well, that's all news. But now tell me how you fellers are gonna make money when they just take away every cent and stuff it in the bank.
The first show, we find out what the city wants. If it wants to shut down the show, it does so. There's not much we can do. The show pulls out, and everyone loses. But that didn't happen here. They went for the money. And they hope to make more money if we open again. That's important to us.
Beats me how to get around it.
Oh, there are ways, Pickens. One is to pay our people as fast as the cash comes in. As fast as the box office takes in cash, it's going out to our cast and crew and suppliers. By the time the show's over and we're being booked, there's not a dime in the cash box. But that has drawbacks. If we're fined, we're still liable, and the local pirates attach our wagons and goods.
So what then?
We cover up. The next show will be, shall we say, fully gowned. If we're still hauled in, we'll be forced to take measures, and that's as much as I can reveal to you.
Why have you got Rusty and me hanging around? What have we got to offer you?
Your presence is very valuable to us. You were, and maybe still are, the sheriff and deputy.
I don't know what's boiling in your noggins, but there's nothing an ex-sheriff can do for you. I can't even carry a sidearm in Doubtful. If you're arrested, I can't unarrest you. If you go before Judge Rampart, I can't change what he does. I'm not on the county payroll, so get that straight.
Just be present and stay close. Tonight there'll be two front center seats for you two.
Count us in.
Yep.
Do I get to meet Ambrosia?
Keep your pants on.
Not if we can help it.
It ended like that. Ralston turned down the wick, and we worked our way into the starlit June night. I knew what I'd be doing the next day. I'd get back on the trail of whoever killed that advance man, Pinky Pearl, in front of the Last Chance Saloon. I might not be in office, but I had some sheriff work to finish up, and that's what I'd do. I stopped in there and found Sammy winding up the night, rinsing out some tumblers.
We're closed.
Yeah, so we can talk. You know anything about this new deputy of Iceberg's?
I don't even know his name.
He looks like the holdup man that caught me a few weeks ago.
What, you saw him well enough?
No, but wide and short and built like a box.
You think Iceberg's playing two sides of the law?
Someone had to start up a crime wave to push me out the door.
I'll ask a few questions. Get a name.
I think he's called the Butcher.
He looks like one.
Critter, he died from a cut throat. A single clean cut from one side to the other. One swipe of a sharp knife. Isn't that how butchers slaughter beef?
Oh, yeah, it is.
If I find out he done it, I'll cut his throat from ear to ear.
You're not the law anymore, Cotton.
That's right, and it gives a man a little more freedom.
Well, I'll ask a few questions and let you know.
I left there and walked to Bell's, half hoping I'd get stuck up again so I could pound the hell out of someone. I woke up blue. Life sure wasn't getting any better. I was missing Critter like a lusty widower misses all six of his wives. I hadn't a job and no prospects, so it was time for a cup of coffee. I indulged once in a while. Coffee gets my blood running and clears the cobwebs out of my mind. I got into my boots, which were down at the heels, and finally meandered into a fine June morning and made it to the Beanery, the foremost eatery in Doubtful, Wyoming. I sat down at the counter, staying two seats away from that supervisor, Ziggy Camp, who I didn't want to talk to. I laid a nickel on the counter and Pedro Perkins filled a mug. Camp eyed me dourly and decided to talk anyway, even though I halfway turned a shoulder against him.
Town ain't the same since you quit, Pickens.
I didn't quit. You kicked my ass out of office.
You quit. It's in the minutes.
I didn't quit and stop trying to cover your behind. If you don't like Doubtful now, you got what you deserve.
Eichberg told us you quit and handed him the badge. We didn't ax you. We were looking at it with all the crime around here all of a sudden, but we were waiting to see what happened.
Eichberg, he told me to fork over my badge because I was no longer sheriff of Pima County, and the supervisor said for him to take over. So I done what I was ordered to do by you politicians.
Is that how it happened? You're saying you didn't resign?
Why would I quit? I like being sheriff here, and I was doing a dandy job, too.
Well, that's debatable, Pickens. The town was becoming unsafe. Come with me.
I drank up and followed. And he took me over to the Pima courthouse and into the county clerk's office and dug into the supervisor's minutes. Then he pointed, but I couldn't read that script, where all them letters bleed into the next, and he took pity on me.
It says here that Berg of Medicine Bow County said you quit and handed him your badge, and then the supervisors accepted your resignation and appointed Berg to your office and agreed on a wage of $75 a month.
I got 40.
We had no sheriff except Berg, so we went along with him.
Why ain't that a piece of cake?
Yes, it is, and it looks like Berg was not being square with us.
Well, that's no help to me.
I'll talk to the others. I've been hearing a few things about Eichberg, how he slowly strangles a town to death, and how bad things happen in his towns.
That don't help me any.
The county's making money with Berg, so it's going to be hard to change things. But even so, things ain't right. I'll get back to you, Pickens.
I'll starve before then.
Give me one day.
I'll starve by this noon.
Then starve!
The supervisor gestured me out, so I quit the place. It sure was a fine morning, bright and sunny, in a town where a feller snookered me out of office. I sure felt dumb. I headed over to Turk's livery barn to talk to Turk, who knew a lot more than he let on. People are always talking in front of hostlers like they don't exist, and Turk always passed along things that might help me keep the peace when I wore the badge. I found him leaning against a shovel and figured he'd just been cleaning out some stalls. You got a minute?
Got nothing but...
This new deputy, the blocky one, he been around?
He came a while before Eichberg and hung around here all the time like he was memorizing who owned what.
He asked questions of you?
Hardly said a word, kept to himself. But he'd sit on that bench out front with a stick and a knife and whittle sticks. I knew he was looking hard, but I didn't know the what of it.
He interested in Critter?
Not as far as I could see. He's just another loafer.
He asked for a job?
No, he had some cash. He quit whittling and go over to the beanery and eat when he felt like it.
Where'd he stay?
He gave me 2 bits and slept in the hayloft.
You ever say what he did?
A butcher. He said he was thinking of starting a butcher shop in Doubtful. I told him we could use one. I never thought he'd end up Berg's deputy.
He ever start some new routine?
Yeah, when Berg showed up from Medicine Bow, the two sometimes ate at the beanery. They knew each other.
He ever say where he was from?
Medicine City. He never said it to me, but when Berg showed up, they talked about Medicine City.
He ever ask questions about people here?
You? He wanted to know about the sheriff.
Like what?
Were you a good man? He said maybe he'd apply for work.
That time I got held up, was he around then?
Oh, Cotton, I can't squarely say for sure. I don't want to nail that down when I'm not sure, but I think so.
Did anyone call him a name?
Luke. Berg called him Luke once when Luke was whittling sticks and I was harnessing up a trotter right there.
A butcher named Luke from Medicine City.
You could get his name off the county payroll.
Anything else you remember about him?
Yeah, there was one thing that made me pretty near spit. That was when Mrs. Sanders showed up and asked him to help her.
With what?
I don't know. Just help her.
What did she say?
She said, "You man there, will you help me, my good man? There's a bit in it for you if you were the one I've heard about." Then the woman Delphinium, dressed in purple as she often does, and the whittler on my bench, they wandered off by themselves.
That don't make no sense.
I never saw them together after that. Just that one time. They didn't go toward the bank. They went down that alley.
One last one. Was this Luke the Butcher around when that stranger got stabbed in front of the Last Chance Saloon?
I can't say for sure. He'd come and go. Some days I wouldn't see him at all.
That night, Rusty and me, we got front center seats again, thanks to management. That next show was even more packed than the opening one. They sold every seat, and there must have been 50 people lining the walls, ready to whistle at the girls. It was pretty much the same show, except the girls were covered more. Ambrosia wore a white gown when she played Lady Godiva, which wrecked the scene as far as I could tell. Later in the show, when they all did them imitations of art with the Bear Girls, they got them all covered up. And Ambrosia wore a light blue gown when she played the Goddess of Liberty, which saddened me. I'd been looking forward to the Goddess of Liberty scene all evening and was feeling a little bit cheated by all that drapery she was wearing. It annoyed me that Ralston and Jardine had caved in so easily to the county, but they had. I guess they needed to make some money and not have it find a way like last time. It was a dandy show with ballet, choruses, dancers, and all that stuff, and I couldn't see how anyone would get upset by it. But I was wrong. No sooner was it over than Ike Berg and his deputy Luke pounced, grabbing the cash box and hauling Jardine and Ralston over to the courtroom where Judge Rampart and Lawyer Stokes and a few other people were burning lamp oil waiting. Ralston motioned for Rusty and me to come along. I guess the owner of the opera house wanted some witnesses. But it went just like before. The warrant was for violating public decency, and the fine was the contents of the box office cash box for that evening. Ralston and Jardine had to defend themselves, since the only lawyer in Doubtful was also the county attorney. So Ralston asked to see the written law and was denied. Rampart said the law was the public sensibility. Jardine asked what in the show violated public decency, and Lawyer Stokes said the show itself did, through and through, and even the music was a crime against decency. He was sort of smiling. Jardine asked the court to find them innocent, since there was no law and no evidence of violating the non-existent law. But Judge Rampart threatened to fine him $10 for contempt and then found the two guilty. That sure was fast. I'd heard of deals like that, but I never saw it before. Justice was sort of a greased tube, in one end and out the other in 2 minutes. The bailiff, he counted the loot in the cash box and pronounced it to be $612 and change. And the banker, Hubert Sanders, he toted the boodle off to his bank to lock up real good in his black enameled safe, and the bailiff blew out the lamps, and pretty soon everyone was out of there. So far, the Grand Luxembourg Follies hadn't been allowed to keep one dime, and a lot of town merchants and the hotel and restaurants hadn't been paid by the show. It sure seemed like a mess. Meanwhile, Pima County was over $1,100 richer, and at that rate, it wouldn't need to charge taxes. Me and Rusty, we went with Jardine and Ralston back to the opera house, which was dark now, with all them actresses gone for the night. Mr. Jardine, I'm fixing to marry Ambrosia and don't know what to ask her.
She won't do it for less than $1,000,000, but you can ask her any way you want.
All right, I'll ask her for $1,000,000.
You going to open tomorrow, Jardine?
We can't run a show on wooden nickels.
It doesn't matter how you drape the show.
No, it doesn't. They'll find a way to take the box office for every show.
You could pull out in the morning.
I've got a cast to pay, a pile of bills to pay. We can't even get our animals out of the livery barn without paying.
Well, you've dealt with this in other towns.
In other towns, there were actual laws on the books, and the fines were $25 or $30 for each infraction. Here, they're inventing laws. The only lawyer in town is acting as county attorney, and the sky's the limit on the fines.
Can we appeal?
To whom? We're a road show. We'll be in the next town in a few days, and then the town after that. It's all here and now. There's no tomorrow in my racket.
How come you don't get mad?
Anger's a wasted emotion. If I showed any anger in that kangaroo court, I'd only end up behind bars and fined all the more. and the anger would keep me from calculating the troubles. This is a difficult town. There's a lot here I don't grasp.
Mr. Jardine, you know there's different folks with different notions here. There's some like the banker's wife and those women who think that having a theater in Doubtful's real bad. There's others, like most of the storekeepers, who think the show's taking cash out of their pockets. But they're also seeing a lot of trade since the show's started coming in, like the saloon men. The whole thing's a mix. Then there's the politicians. They're stuck with Ike Berg. And it's Ike Berg who's running this here town now. He's the one making the arrests, collecting the box office, hauling you fellers off to court, telling the judge how much is in the box each night.
What are we supposed to do about that?
Leave it to Rusty and me, and maybe my old deputies. Maybe we can fix it.
How?
I don't think Ike Berg's in there legal. I think he took over and scared the supervisors into going along with him. I think maybe you'd get to keep your take each night if Berg and that Luke the Butcher didn't jump your ticket window before people hardly got settled for the show. You keep the show going, no matter what. Me and Rusty, we got some work to do.
What sort of work?
I'm gonna take my badge back.
You think you can? And that the supervisors would go along once they're getting rid of you?
Well, I've been doing a little poking around. That crime wave that got me in trouble, I know where it came from. I haven't got real hard evidence yet, but I know. I know who held me up that night, who got into my room and stole my gun, who killed your advanced man, and who stole Critter and killed the best friend I ever did have.
Who?
I ain't saying yet. You keep your show going. Me and Rusty, we have a job to do, and maybe in a few days we'll get your money back to you. Maybe not. Ike Berg, they call him Iceberg for good reason. And Luke the Butcher, the one who's deputy now, he's even more dangerous than Berg.
I'm not quite following you, Pickens.
I ain't quite following myself. I'm out in front of my thoughts. My ma always warned me about getting in front of my head. How would Doubtful look to you if there was another sheriff around here?
Who'd that be?
That badge belongs right here on my chest.
But you were fired.
I'm still sheriff, far as I can figure, and I aim to get my badge back real quick now. And if I do, you'll get your money back.
That would be an improvement on robbing the bank.
Well, that sure is an interesting notion.
How do you propose to return our box office to us? It's the county's.
I'm not real sure yet, but I will. Soon as I get Iceberg and Luke the Butcher out of here. You run your show tomorrow as you see fit.
Two shows. Matinee tomorrow.
Well, two shows then. You run both, even if they make off with your box office take again.
Are you trying to help us or enrich your county?
Do what you want. Hit the road if that's what you want. Let that watch and ward bunch shut down your theater and drive you out.
I'm going to invite Delphinium Sanders to the matinee. For the sake of art.
I didn't think we'd solved anything back there, but we slipped into the night. Rusty headed to his shack, but I was restless and headed for the last chance, intending to buy a 5-cent mug of beer from Sammy Upward. It was a real nice idea, because there were them showgirls in there, with a lot of fellers crowded around, and everyone having a real cozy time. I got my beer from Sammy and headed over there, because Ambrosia was sitting there. Her coppery hair drawing me like a magnet.
Hey, it's the stage door Johnny.
That's me. I was asking your boss if I could marry you, and he said you'd do it for $1 million.
Make it two.
That's real nice. You can bring it with you, and we'll get started as fast as I can line up a preacher.
Anytime, any place.
How about now?
Are you sure you want a preacher? I don't like preachers.
Well, there ain't but one in Doubtful, and he'd be asleep by now. But we can start this honeymoon in advance and fix everything regular in the morning. Iceberg and Luke the Butcher wandered in just then. No wonder Berg was called Iceberg. It was a cold wind blowing through the place. Cold and mean and bleak.
This is a disorderly house. I'm shutting it down. And for good. This place is closed. And all of you, I'm taking you in. You're all inmates of a disorderly house, and you'll face justice in the morning. Come along, man. And you, Upward, bring your till with you. You're going to be paying a lot of fines.
Oh, what the hell are you talking about?
Luke the Butcher slammed a billy club into Sammy, who dropped behind the bar.
Get up.
Sammy did, real slow, rubbing his head where the club had conked his skull. I couldn't remember what the fine was for all that, but I didn't have it, and I knew I'd be spending the night in the Pima County Jail along with these people, and maybe 10 days more if I couldn't come up with the price of my freedom. But I wasn't the only one who was real unhappy just then. The only happy ones were Iceberg, who had a glint in his dead eye, and Luke the Butcher, who was looking us over like we were slabs of meat. Iceberg and Luke the Butcher herded us all into a single cell. It was going to be a lot tighter in there than anyone cared for, and with nothing but a single slop pail for us all, men and women.
I'd like some water, please.
In the morning.
What's the fine?
$2 for being an inmate, $10 for running a disorderly house.
What if we don't have it?
Tough luck.
When do we go to court?
When I feel like taking you.
Where can we get bail?
I'm fresh out.
Hey, Sheriff, I'll bail everyone out from a till.
Well, you donated everything in it to the Pima County Retirement Fund.
Yeah, well, then you won't ever see any of it.
Will we get out in time for the matinee?
I hope not.
It's cold. Can we have blankets?
You sure didn't catch cold up on that stage with nothing on.
Iceberg shut the jailhouse door and disappeared. And we started getting ourselves comfortable. It didn't look like there'd be enough space for us to get settled on the bare concrete, but we worked it out, sitting down real tight. I sort of wondered how long that would last. Pretty quick, someone would need to take a leak. I caught a glint of red hair and worked my way down to sit beside Ambrosia, who was looking pretty grumpy. Would you marry me?
You from Doubtful?
Sort of.
You bust me out of here in the next 10 minutes and get me 1,000 miles from Doubtful, and I'll marry you if you're nice.
I'd sure like a lot of babies.
I've been in enough jails.
Something's crawling on my leg.
Well, I hope it's just a cootie, but it could be a sewer slug.
I'll stand the rest of the night.
It sure was a long night. I tried to woo Ambrosia and tell her I like gals who have red hair all over, but she just snarled at me. Dawn finally filtered through the little window high up, and I thought maybe something would happen, but nothing did. I was sure getting thirsty. People could see each other now, and I never saw such a miserable lot. The girls were not very pretty that morning and looked pretty broke down, like old nags. Nothing happened. The sun rose, and the place warmed a little. A commotion out in the sheriff's office caught our attention, and I heard Ralston and Jardine in there, and hoped they would bail us out. I caught enough of the talk to know they were trying to free us, but finally it quieted out there, and we were still rotting behind bars. So thick in there, we were like a pile of dead rats. Finally, in the middle of the day, Iceberg opened up the jail door and came back to the cell and looked us over.
I'll be taking you to the county court now, so clean up. Judge Rampart will convene court at 2, and you will be fined then.
2? We'll miss the matinee.
Iceberg smiled slightly. It seemed like another half hour slipped by, and then Iceberg and Luke the Butcher showed up.
You didn't clean up. Judge Rampart won't like that.
We'd all gotten smart enough to keep our traps shut. But Luke the Butcher unlocked our cell door and motioned for us to follow him, while Iceberg stood at the cell door watching us crowd out and into fresher air. I just wanted air. Clean air. Sweet air. And soon I'd have it. I was going to be the last out, and was standing behind the others as they crowded past Iceberg. So I plucked up that overflowing slop bucket, and when Iceberg saw it, it was too late. I splashed the whole thing right in his face. It splattered him, blinded him, and oozed down his white shirt and black suit coat, and while he was trying to wipe that crap out of his eyes and nose and mouth, I got a hand on his sidearm and yanked. And clobbered him on the skull, and he sank senseless to the ground. I shoved ahead and clobbered Luke the Butcher. He didn't go down, being built like a bull, but he was dazed long enough for me to shove him back toward that stinking cell, and I pushed him in. And I dragged Iceberg in and got their keys away from them and locked them the hell in there. I didn't hang around, but got out of the jail and locked the jailhouse door. Outside, I saw the people who'd been in there with me vanish this way and that. We were out, but the trouble was only beginning. I returned to the sheriff's office and found my own gun belt, the one that got stole from me at Bell's, hanging there, so I took it back. There was one more thing I wanted, and that was my badge. So I went back to the jail cell where Iceberg was sitting, trying to wipe that crap away. Toss me the badge. He froze. Toss it to me or I'll kill you. He studied me a while, and then he unpinned it and pitched it through the bars. He had sense enough not to say anything, because if he'd said anything, I'd probably have killed him for saying it. He stared at me with those dead eyes, eyes without life back behind them, and I knew it wasn't over. The butcher was just sitting there, holding his head. I had the badge. After a bath and a change of clothing, I might put it on. I wanted to clean up. I hiked through the middle of the day, got to Bell's, scrubbed my flesh raw, and got into some fresh clothing, leaving the rest to stink until I could get to it. Then I headed for the county courthouse and hunted down a supervisor. Finding Reggie Thimble in there soaking his tonsils from a flask.
What are you doing here?
Here is what I'm doing. I pulled my sheriff's star from my pocket and pinned it on. And he stared at it and me. I never quit. Iceberg told you I did, but that was a lie. You may have been fixing to fire me with some help from Berg, and I told you I wanted 30 days. And until that time's used up, I'm still sheriff. And if you want to know where Berg is, you'll find him stinking up a jail cell with his favorite hooligan, Luke the Butcher. If you want me out, you can call a regular meeting of supervisors and do it, and tell me proper, in person, and give me notice in writing. Until then, I'll enforce any laws on the books and protect anyone from being harassed by made-up laws. You give me a law to enforce, and I'll do it. And that's what separates me from Berg.
Oh, that's quaint. Imagine that. And what are Berg and the butcher in for?
See this gun belt? It's mine. It's what went missing in the crime wave that got your knickers in a twist. It was hanging right there, property of Berg and the butcher. So maybe I'll just go back there and make some charges.
Yeah, that would be entertaining. Never a dull moment around here.
He was drunk, so I let him stew in his juices. He'd heard from me. I'd told him what needed saying. I debated what to do with Berg and the butcher and decided to deal proper with him, so I went back there, found them stinking and glaring, cleaned the piss pot and handed it to them, and brought them clean drinking water, and dug around for clean stuff for them to wear, all the while saying nothing. I also got them some soap and a bucket of scrub water and slid it into that stinking cell. It wouldn't do any good. Some people, they stink from inside, and even after they're cleaned up outside, they still stink. I headed out of there and entered some items in my arrest log, which hadn't been tended during Berg's brief stay in my office. I charged them with the theft of my gun belt, stolen property found in their possession. Maybe I'd come up with a few more items real quick. I thought that impersonating a peace officer was a crime, but I'd have to get Rusty to look it up. My ma, she always said crooked men walk crooked ways, and Iceberg couldn't walk a straight line if he tried. I headed back there, let the butcher out first, frisked and cuffed him, and then did the same for Berg, and walked them across the square to the courthouse. Judge Rampart was in there, and sure looked like he'd seen the second coming of Beelzebub when I herded my prisoners in.
Watch this.
I'm booking them for theft, Your Eminence.
You're not the sheriff.
I'm the sheriff.
I thought Ike Berg was the new sheriff.
He fooled me out of my badge, so I took it back.
Would you mind explaining?
The supervisors was thinking of firing me, saying there was a crime wave around here. Berg showed up and was angling for the job. One day he told me the supervisors had made him sheriff and I should turn over the badge. So I did. Then he went and told them supervisors I'd resigned and he'd take over. So he fooled them and fooled me. Meanwhile, I found out who was bedeviling me, robbing my room, killing my horse, sticking me up. It was Berg's new deputy, Luke the Butcher. He killed my horse, but I'm having a bad time proving it. I had a chance to toss Berg out, and I done it, and took back my badge. And I'm keeping it until I get a written 30-day notice. And I'm pressing charges against both, as you know. And I couldn't tell whether he favored liars pretending to be lawmen or a real lawman trying to send liars up the river.
Oh, well, I will need to consult with the county attorney and supervisors.
I'm releasing you two on your own recognizance. Don't leave Puma County. Report to me daily. Release these gents.
They ain't gents.